Just keeping people inside today. It's either that or everyone heard about my great classes. I don't know which. You know, probably the rain. Anyway, we always start off, for those of you who are new here, with a very short song, a bhajan called that Shiel Krop introduced, and he always sang before Bhagavatam classes, the Jai Radhamadava. So we'll just do that. And it's all about the Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Jaya Radha Madhava Chinta Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Pahalava Gidavarid Hari. Gopi Jana Pahalava Gidavarid Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Bhavraja Kachara Sutera Sada Shri Shimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nandakota Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. All glorious to assemble devotees. All glorious to assemble devotees. All glorious to assemble devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pasai Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vananta Swami Kanamana Namaste Sarasvati Gauravani Bhachani Navishesha Shinni Bhadi Pastacha Adishitani Jai Shri Prabhupada. Okay, we're going to be reading today from the Bhagavad Gita, the beautiful song of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which was written over 5,000 years ago. Chapter 15, verse 15, but I'm going to start back a couple of verses. So if you could, just to give a little background, bring us up to speed of where we are in this. If you could start on here with 15:12, can you find that? I'm just going to read the verses for 15, 12, 13, 14. And the title of today's talk is Krishna's Kindness to All Living Beings. Okay? So, here we are. I'm just going to read the English of these verses. So, starting with 12, Krishna says, "The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world, comes from me. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire also come from me." 13, "I enter into each planet, and by my energy they stay in orbit. I become the moon and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables." 14, "I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest all four kinds of foodstuffs." So, this is a little prologue here. In these verses and purports by Srila Prabhupada, it's explained how everything is coming from Krishna. Everything emanates from him, everything is maintained by him, and the very existence of everything within this universe, the planets, the sun, the moon, the fire, and all things that give life to all living entities in this material world are due to the energy of the Lord. So Krishna's all-pervading features, the entire cosmic manifestation has been described here, sometimes called Virata Rupa or various different terms. And these powers that he has are called Vibhutis. In other words, he's personified by these different powers. It's not that Krishna becomes the sun exactly, but at the same time he does. In other words, his energy is there pervading everything and empowering everything within this universe. And next, we're going to go to verse 15, which is today's verse. It shifts a little bit, because now it says, talks about how Krishna shows that he has a personal relationship with all of us. And it's a more personal feature of Krishna, known as the Supersoul, or the Paramatma, that is within the heart of every living entity. And so out of kindness, Krishna will help us get out of this material world, and he helps us get out of this world. He also helps us to stay in this material world and enjoy this material world, if that's our desire too. So this is his great kindness that he shows to us. So today's verse, I'll just read through it. Savasyacham hridi sannivishto mataksmatir gyanam apohanam cha vidayishta sarvaraham eva vedyo vedanta krit deda vedeva chaham. Very well-known verse to many of you. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada's purport, which I'll find quickly. It's rather long, so I'll stay with it. Ooh, this is the tiny print. Now, some of you people my age notice that the print in books is getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, right.
Okay. The Supreme Lord is situated as Paramatma in everyone's heart, and it's from him that all activities are initiated. The living entity forgets everything of his past life, but he has to act according to the direction of the Supreme Lord, who is the witness to all his work. Therefore, he begins his work according to his past deeds. Required knowledge is supplied to him, and remembrance is given to him, and he forgets also about his past life. Thus, the Lord is not only all-pervading, he is also localized in every individual heart. He awards the different fruitive results. He is worshipful not only as the impersonal Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the localized Paramatma, but as the form of the incarnation of the Vedas as well. The Vedas give the right direction to people so that they can properly mold their lives and come back to Godhead, back to home. The Vedas offer knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and Krishna is our incarnations, as Vyasadeva is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. The commentation on Vedanta Sutra by Vyasadeva in the Srimad Bhagavatam gives the real understanding of the Vedanta Sutra. The Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is the supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activities, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas. And as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita, he is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good, God is all merciful. Which is why the title of this talk today is Krishna, he is all mercy to the conditioned souls. Antak Parvishta Shastra Jananam. There's not an exact translation, but this is from Tartarika Upanishad. I tried to look it up. It's one of the Upanishads. But Prabhupada basically explains it. The living entity forgets as soon as he quits his present body, but he begins his work again, initiated by the Supreme Lord. Although he forgets, the Lord gives him the intelligence to renew his work where he ended his last life. So not only does the living entity enjoy or suffer in this world according to the dictation from the Supreme Lord, situated locally in the heart, but he receives the opportunity to understand the Vedas from him. If one is serious about understanding the Vedic knowledge, then Krishna gives the required intelligence. Why does he present the Vedic knowledge for understanding? Because a living entity individually needs to understand Krishna. Vedic literature confirms this. Yosau sarvar vidyar gyate. In all the Vedic literature, beginning from the four Vedas, Vedanta Sutra, the Upanishads, and the Puranas, the glories of the Supreme Lord are celebrated. By performance of Vedic rituals, discussion of the Vedic philosophers and worship of the Lord in devotional service, he is attained. Therefore, the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Krishna. The Vedas give us direction by which to understand Krishna and the process of realizing him. The ultimate goal is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedanta Sutra 114 confirms in the following words, Tattu Samanvayat. One can attain perfection in three stages. By understanding Vedic literature, one can understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By performing the different processes, one can approach him. And at the end, one can attain the supreme goal, who is no other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this verse, the purpose of the Vedas, the understanding of the Vedas, and the goal of the Vedas are clearly defined. So, verse once again. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So, the Paramatma is in the heart of all living beings. This word Paramatma, para means supreme and atma means soul. So sometimes it translates as super soul. Sometimes you hear the term oversoul. Another Sanskrit term is used sometimes as antaryami. All basically mean the same thing. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in its localized aspect is within the heart of every living entity. Not only in the heart of every living entity, including animals, plants, every living thing, but even within every atom. This is described in our Vedic literatures. So Krishna is all-pervading. He is everywhere. He is everything. So while Krishna is one complete whole, he has many expansions, energies, incarnations that act in a variety of ways. So it's not as though God, Krishna, becomes split up into millions of tiny particles, you know, and somehow his identity would be lost. No, this is what's called achinta shakti, which means his inconceivable energy. Krishna's inconceivable energy is that he is able to remain himself, the complete whole, Purnam, and at the same time expand himself into the hearts of every living entity in the universe and all the universes. So Prabhupada mentions here the different features that Krishna has. As I said, he has a variety of energies, but his most basic features that he manifests or show are called Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. And of course, this is described in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanti tat tatvadvidas tatvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdite, which the translation is, learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Now this word advayam, non-dual, means that there's no qualitative difference between the features. In other words, Krishna is one of one spiritual quality. This is all his spiritual energy, but it manifests in different ways. So the Brahman is the effulgence. Sometimes people think that the Brahman is highest, that it's the spiritual energy, the all-pervading spiritual energy. And it is an all-pervading spiritual energy, yes. But Bhagavad Gita also says, Brahmanohi Pratishtanam. Krishna says, I am the source of that impersonal Brahman. So the Brahman is like the impersonal feature. It's the aspect of, it's called Brahmajyoti sometimes, the effulgence of the Lord. So it actually is an emanation from Krishna's body. From his effulgence comes the Brahman. And sometimes people want to merge into or become one with that Brahman. And that, of course, is something that is possible. It's not easy, particularly in this age, because it takes great yogis or great jnanis, you know, people who are very powerful spiritualists to be able to do this. It's not recommended necessarily, but it is one possible option. Then there's Paramatma, who we were discussing today, who is the super soul or the all-pervading aspect localized within the heart of every living entity. And then Bhagavan. And when we talk about Krishna, as we see on the altar here, Radha and Krishna, we are usually talking about Bhagavan. This is the personal feature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Krishna complete, with personality, with variety, with all energies. He has pastimes, he has lila, with all of his wonderful devotees, many, many ways. He has incarnations that appear, Ramachandra, Nrsingadev, so many. This is Krishna Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who has all opulences, one who has complete fame, one complete strength, knowledge, renunciation, beauty. What did I miss? No, you weren't listening. I don't think I only got five. Try it again. Knowledge, fame, beauty, renunciation, strength. Power. I said, did I say that? Oh, opulence, power? Okay. Anyway, we got him, I think. Thank you. Thank you, audience. So, why are there different realizations? Why do some people approach Krishna as the Brahman effulgence? Why some as the Paramatma? Great yogis will meditate on the Paramatma within the heart to achieve spiritual realization. And devotees, basically, like us, the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, we worship primarily, I mean, we have total respect for Brahman and Paramatma, who's in our heart, but we worship Bhagavan. We worship Krishna in his most complete, supreme, original position. These are meant for different peoples, different modes, different levels of advancement, different categories of jivas. Krishna gives something to everyone, honestly. This is another reason why I'm saying Krishna is the most merciful. Because however you want to approach Krishna, which I'll talk about a little more, that Krishna will reciprocate with. So even those who are spiritualists or transcendentalists, people who are looking for the absolute truth in life, they may be on different levels. They may have different experiences, and they may have different desires. So it's actually considered to be fairly rare for someone to really seek out Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, 7:19, Krishna talks about that it's a rare soul who understands Krishna as the Supreme Person. As Bahunam Chamanamante, Gyanavamam Prabhajante, Vasudeva Saramiti, Samahatma Sadurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me means Krishna, to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So, this non-dual substance of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, advanced devotees see this all as Krishna's energies. So yes, it's all Krishna's spiritual energies, but yet there is a difference in the qualities of those energies. And so they're all worshipped somewhat differently, and there are different, obviously there's different results from different types of worship. Now in today's verse, Krishna as the Paramatma is described as the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And here it's discussed particularly in the beginning about in relationship to the transmigration of the soul from one body to another. So after the death of the body of the jiva, it's not really our death because, of course, the jiva is eternal, immortal. We don't die, but the body dies. The body that we're inhabiting dies at a certain point. Then what happens? We go into another body, depending upon our particular activities, our karmic reactions, etc. And then what happens? The jiva, when we say the jiva, we mean the soul, the atma, the real self is the jiva. That jiva forgets his past lifetimes. Now, occasionally you hear about people who remember past lifetimes. It can be a little bit, but basically we mostly forget. We forget all about what happened in our last lifetime. We don't know whether we were an animal, whether we were a king, whatever we were. But the state of consciousness remains. It's restored. And it is because it actually, it remains in the subtle body. The soul is in the subtle body, which is the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. Okay? Not the gross body, which has died. But the subtle body, the soul is carried in that to the next body. And then what happens is the super soul revives that remembrance, not so much of what happened in your last lifetime, but what the desires of that particular soul were. So if I strove really hard to make money and I get really, that's all my main interest was, but you know, I was reasonably good person, but you know, then I'd be born in a situation where that desire to make money would be there and Krishna would actually help facilitate that. If I deserve that due to my past karma, if I hadn't done too many sinful activities. So whatever state of consciousness we have at the time of death, that continues on to our next life. And of course, 8:6 says, Yang Yang Vapi Smaran Bhavan Twaja Jante Kalevaram Tam Tam Evaiti Kuntaya Sadat Bhava Bhavita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. So that's the continuity of consciousness. So our current consciousness prepares us for our future body. Well, sometimes people say, oh, what am I going to be? You know, when some people get interested in reincarnation, and, you know, they often think, well, what would I like to be in my next lifetime? It doesn't quite work like that. It's not like, what would I like to be? You desire, but you also have to deserve. Prabhupada said deserve and desire. So in other words, you have to get enough credits, you know, to get an advanced body. And if you have too many bad credits, like sinful activities, you know, if you've gone around, you know, hurting people and doing terrible things, then you're probably going to get a lower body, whether you want it or not. So yes, it's dependent upon the desires, but those desires manifest in our activities, right? What we really want, we tend to act out. And by acting out those things, we create the next body, whether it's good or bad, or, you know, good or bad, quote unquote. So the continuity, the level of consciousness continues, and Krishna induces forgetfulness of the past lifetime, but the impressions of the past continue on with the soul through the subtle body. Then the Paramatma gives the intelligence on how to act out the desires from previous life. Okay? And the cycle will continue onward for an indefinite number of births and deaths. You can stay here doing this life after life for thousands and thousands and millions of years and lifetimes. And probably most of us have, to be honest. We've probably been here a long time going through many, many lifetimes. It's a fact, because we try to desire, you know, we try to fulfill desires, we try to act and enjoy in so many different ways here. And finally we come to a point where somehow it sinks in. Maybe this isn't really working. Maybe this going through the cycle of birth and death, going through so many experiences, so much suffering, which the material world always has suffering, if nothing else. Even if someone has a fairly good life, they're fairly healthy, things seem pretty good for them, eventually what happens? Birth, death, disease, and old age. Every one of us will experience those. So finally we realize probably time to try something better. So Krishna gives the knowledge for each living entity for their continued existence, and then also the knowledge of how to get out of this material world. And when we talk about this continued existence, that Krishna gives this ability to maintain the material world, it's not just human beings. It's animals, plants, every living entity. When you think about it, how do animals know what to do? How do they know how to sustain themselves? How do they know what they need to do? When you think about it, you know, it's very complex, the material world, isn't it? I don't know if you study biology, it's this complex network of interrelationships and how one living entity, you know, lives off another and how it all works together. How does that all happen? Just by chance? We say no. This is all Krishna's arrangement. And the super soul within even the plant, the animal thing, is guiding them in what they need to do. Now, we often hear this term instinct, right? We say, oh, animals have instinct. When we can't explain why in the world they're doing what they're doing or how they know what to do, we call it instinct. This is what a lot of science is, putting a label on something we don't understand. So instinct is actually very simple. Prabhupada defined it in one purport. He said instinct is two things, learned behavior and the super soul guiding. Right? Okay. How does a duck know how to fly, where to go, how to fly south? Say, well, he follows the other one, but some duck had to know it first. You know? Super soul guiding them. Okay. So, another verse, 9th verse, 1861. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, or Arjuna, and directing the wanderings of all living entities. We're seated as on a machine made of material energy. This body is often described as a machine in the Vedic literatures, because it is. You know, sometimes you think about that, like when you get older, you think, well, you know, it's like all your spare parts are kind of breaking down, you know, you need replace parts sometimes, and like that, you know. Yeah, you can really see the analogy of it. But, you know, just like the driver doesn't think he's the car, right? His car's breaking down, but he can walk out of the car and get another car. In the same way, we're in this body. We don't think, well, I'm this body any more than we think I'm the car, if I'm the driver of the car. Anyway, all plants, animals, human beings, everyone is guided by super soul. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about the different ways that Krishna and the super soul are helping the living entities. First, we see how we just talked about Krishna helps all living entities in the material world, humans, animals, everybody, just to maintain their lives. But secondly, he also helps humans, human beings particularly, live a good life in this world and how to make some advancement in material life, in religion. They say the those basic goals of life that are given. Even the Vedic literature talks about, sense gratification, economic development, religiosity, and finally liberation, right? So those are given there. And many of the Vedic literatures talk about how you can make advancement in these things if you want to have a good life. Now, to lead a good life, you can't do a lot of sinful activities. You have to actually lead a good life to have a good life. It's pretty simple, Not understood by everybody in Kali Yuga, but in this age that we're in. But nevertheless, you have to do good works, good deeds to have a good result. And in fact, in Bhagavad Gita 3.10, Krishna talks about how in the beginning, sacrifices were given for Vishnu and for, all the demigods, men and everyone who created. And it was said, be thou happy by the sacrifice and all good things would be bestowed upon you. And Prabhupada says in a purport on that Krishna gives the opportunity to live peacefully in this world and then gives you the knowledge to get out. He says, that is the plan. Live a good life and then get out of this material world, okay? So that's the third thing. The super soul helps the transcendentalists to achieve liberation from this material world, and more than just liberation, develop their innate loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, devotional service, and then return back home, back to Godhead, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So that's all provided by Krishna. And how does he do this? Well, for those people who want to achieve higher transcendental results, who want to know him, who actually want to get out of this material world and achieve true spiritual consciousness, he sends the Vedas to enlighten the conditioned souls. And that's what a lot of this verse talks about, how Krishna is the compiler of the Vedas, the knower of the Vedas, and the goal of the Vedas. So the Vedas, of course, are the Vedic literatures. That is the original scriptures given by God to help us understand spiritual life. Now, of course, these originated in India. Many of you are from India who understand that. You know this, but not everybody necessarily does. We had never heard of it, most of us who are Westerners, until Srila Prabhupada explained it to us. But basically, we have, first of all, the Shrutis, which are the four Vedas, the Rig, Samar, Yajur, and Atharva Vedas. And these were the original Vedas, and they're kind of hard to understand. They take a lot of interpretation. They cover everything. They cover everything from how to do diplomacy and how to conduct warfare to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the way from A to Z is there. So Krishna even tells Arjuna, don't get lost in the flowery words of the Vedas. He said, in other words, they can be bewildering to you. In other words, keep focused on the goal here. So to help explain the four Vedas, the Upanishads were compiled. And there's 108 Upanishads, and they are, quite ancient. These are all very, very ancient scriptures. These are the oldest, the Vedas and the Upanishads. Of course, when I say oldest, that means what historians consider in terms of, written language and like that. We know that these are all eternal. All the literature and scriptures are spoken by God. They're eternally existing, but they might appear at certain historical times within certain universes. Of course, these were mostly an oral tradition because people had such good minds that, one person could speak to another and then that person would hear it and remember it all. Anyway, as the Kali Yuga, which is the age we're in now, which started 5,000 years ago, is the worst age, right? Everything is bad. Our memories are no good. We don't have patience. We don't, nothing. It's very difficult. People can't sit down and meditate for 1,000 years or even 5 years or even 10 minutes for the most part. So Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of Krishna, appeared 5,000 years ago. He divided the Vedas and he expanded upon them to all types of knowledge. Then he wrote the Vedanta Sutra, which was very, very short. Sutras are little short statements that kind of summarized everything in the Vedas. But even that can be understood in different ways. In fact, Sankaracharya, who appeared, when did he appear, about 1,100 AD or 900? About 1,000 years ago, right? 600 AD? Okay, even longer. Anyway, Sankaracharya, who was actually an incarnation of Lord Shiva, and he appeared for a very specific purpose, which was to restore the Vedas, because Buddhism had more or less rejected the Vedas because of their animal sacrifices, and brought up, you know, and Buddha taught ahimsa, you know, to save the animals from suffering. Buddha was also an incarnation of Krishna. So then after that, but to get people back on track, first Shankaracharya, you know, rejected Buddhism and brought people back to the Vedas, but he gave an impersonal interpretation. So his commentaries on Vedanta Sutra basically were saying that, you know, God and the living entity are one, you know, there's the one Brahman, we all merge into Brahman, you know, everything that we experience in the material world is simply illusion. You know, when you no longer have illusion, you no longer have any separate existence, and you merge back into Brahman. I'm oversimplifying it. I mean, this is very heady, difficult philosophy, but that's basically what he's saying, you know. So, of course, we totally reject that. But at any rate, so that was Vedanta Sutra. So it could be misinterpreted too. So what was the problem? We had the Puranas, we had the Mahabharata, we had, you know, many different scriptures, the Upanishads, we had the Puranas, there are 18 Puranas, six of them are in the mode of ignorance, six are for the mode, not in, but four people in the mode of ignorance, six are for the mode of good passion, and six for the mode of goodness. So even the Puranas, which some of them are very, very elevated and wonderful pastimes of Krishna, etc., but they can be confusing to people. So finally, Vyasadeva was in a little bit of a quandary, and he didn't know what to do. He said he wasn't his disturbed. So Narada Muni, his spiritual master, came to him and said to him, "You're not happy because there's one thing you haven't done. You have not properly glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna and made it very clear that Krishna is the goal of life." So he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most important literature for the Vaishnava devotees of Krishna. So Bhagavad Gita, of course, also. Bhagavad Gita is very basic philosophy, and then more advanced philosophy in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have all these literatures, and the Bhagavatam teaches us that it's the topmost literature that explains the personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him. So when Krishna says, "By all the Vedas I am to be known," this is what He means. Behind all the vast hundreds and thousands and millions of verses in all these literatures, and there really is, I think there's 100,000 verses in the original four Vedas. I don't know if they all exist yet. And I think the Puranas have about 400,000 verses. I don't know. It's a lot. It's Bhagavatam. Our Srimad Bhagavatam alone is 18,000 verses, and it's not one of the longest ones. So there's all of these verses, but it all comes down to a very simple thing. "By all the Vedas, I am to be known," Krishna says. So it comes down to, we want to know Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We want to understand ourselves as eternal servants of the Personality of Godhead. And we want to learn the process of loving devotional service to Krishna so that we can know Him and return to Him. So Krishna comes. He comes as incarnations. He comes as the Vedic literatures, which are also His incarnation. Now, it's not discussed in this, but I don't want to overlook. He also sends the great saints and sages, the spiritual masters, the gurus. They come to explain the Vedas, because it's very difficult. If we didn't have, say, Srila Prabhupada's purports to a lot of these verses, they would even be confusing to us. Even Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which are really quite clear in many ways, if you're a new beginning, you know, person reading philosophy, it wouldn't be so clear. In fact, it's often not so clear to us now without the purports of the acharyas. The acharya means a teacher, one who teaches by example. So it's not just that you preach lofty words, you have to show that example in your personal life. And so these saintly personalities explain all of these literatures to us. And also, along with the Shastra, the scriptures, the saintly spiritual masters, Krishna also provides intelligence within the heart to understand. So Prabhupada once said that the super soul is the form direction, I'm sorry, the intelligence is the form direction of the supersoul, meaning that the way that we understand supersoul often working within us is through our intelligence. This is the same here, that Krishna the Paramatma gives us the intelligence, gives us the knowledge. Sometimes we may not even be completely aware of it. Oh yes, this is Super Soul direct to me, but nevertheless, that intelligence that we have that we're able to use in devotional service is coming from Krishna ultimately. And that's based upon, how do we receive that? It's based upon our desire and our sincerity of each soul. Bhagavad Gita 10:10 says, Dami Buddhi Yogam Ta, I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. He says he will give us that intelligence, the intelligence that will direct us towards him and the path of devotional service, if that is our desire. So we all have a purpose in this material world. And it's interesting because I was just thinking of this in 435 Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says there's a line in one of his purports where he says, the living beings, the separate part and parcels of the Supreme, have a purpose to fulfill. So we all have a purpose. We have a very deep spiritual purpose that every one of us has. Why are we here? Why are we here in this world? Why am I in this lifetime? What is our purpose? How do we fulfill that? Well, there's two aspects of that. Our purpose is not separate from God. Our purpose is to be aligned with God and Guru, to do their will, to be part and parcel again of Krishna. And at the same time, we understand that we are eternally separate living entities. So both are there, the oneness and the difference, the Chinta Beda Veda Tattva. So each of us has a unique relationship with Krishna, and because Krishna is independent, has complete, total will, we as little parts and parcels of Krishna have small amount of independence and free will. We've been created that way, as little reflections of Krishna. Now, we are very tiny. Krishna, of course, is everything, absolute, and we are little sparks from the fire, right? Little drops of water in the ocean. But nevertheless, he's given us that free will. And unfortunately, coming to the material world, most of us misuse that free will. And here we are, suffering in the material world. But by that same free will and using that same mind, intelligence, and desires that got us into this trouble, we can use that to get out of this material world. Krishna says our mind is our worst enemy or our best friend. It all depends upon our desire. So because of that free will, only a few souls in this material world really want to know God and to serve him. 7:19 says, after many births and deaths, he who's actually acknowledged surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes. Such a great soul is very rare. So this should be our desire, to try to understand Krishna. And by understanding, one other point I was going to make here is there's sort of like three types of knowledge or three ways, aspects of knowing Krishna, which are mentioned at the end of this purport. I didn't want to neglect that because Prabhupada talked about this. Prabhupada says, by understanding the Vedic literature, one can understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By performing different processes, one can approach him. And at the end, one can attain the supreme goal, who is no other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, these three sort of different processes of knowledge are called Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha means that one makes that, it means like connection. One makes that connection with Krishna, knowing about Krishna. Bhagavad Gita is a literature of Sambandha that gives us that knowledge of how to understand Krishna. Abhideya is the process. How do we do it? And that's the process of Bhakti Yoga, which is taught in our scriptures and taught by our spiritual masters. In other words, our hearing, our chanting, our remembering, all those processes, serving, all of those processes we do of devotional service. And then Prayojana is the final goal, the supreme goal, which is, of course, going back to Godhead, understanding Krishna, knowing Krishna and our relationship with him. So Krishna's greatest mercy is that he gives each one of us, each jiva, what we desire. We can choose to try to enjoy in this material world, and he will give us facility for that. We can choose to try to live a religious life and maybe make advancement to higher planets. He will help us do that. Or we can choose to try to know Krishna, to serve Krishna, to get out of this material world and go back home, back to Godhead, with our eternal position at the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So it's up to us. Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita 4:11, Yeyatamang prapajante tangs tatayava bhajamiham mama vartmanavartante manusha partasarvata. As all of them surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O Sanakrita. So Krishna reciprocates equally with everyone. However the devotee wishes to relate with Krishna, however one wants to love him, Krishna says, that's fine. I will do that. You can have that relationship with me, and I will fulfill that. So if one sincerely wants to know Krishna, be with Krishna, understand Krishna within one's heart, Krishna will give that to us. A lot of advancement in Krishna consciousness, I would say, after trying to do this for 50 years, mostly unsuccessfully, really has to do with desire. It's what you want. Krishna will give us what we want. If we really want to advance in Krishna consciousness, he will give us the intelligence to do that, and he will show us, and he will reciprocate with us according to our desires. So, remember how Krishna is always there within the heart, giving his mercy to every living entity. Thank you all very much for your kind attention. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Any questions, comments? See, everybody's very inspired. Must be prasadam time. Okay. Oh, one? We have one. In time.
Thank you very much for what you taught. It was really good. Really good. And that comes from the heart. And I'm not evaluating. I have no means of evaluating anybody anymore. But two things, and if you don't want to answer this question, you don't have to. And I'm addressing this more in regards to what you said about the transmigration of the soul and the popularity or unpopularity of reincarnation that we hear. I've heard it since I was 8 years old, you know, a little boy in Florida. But what I wanted to say, one person I know said one time, and I won't say what kind of background this person was from, and he was an adult, and it was during the 70s, made it very clear, especially because in the 70s, all of what was happening with the understanding of transmigration, even today, but not so much. But be that as it may, the person made a statement saying that one embraces the teaching of the transmigration of the soul or reincarnation simply to get away from the fear of hell. Okay? That's, if you want to comment on that, that's fine. If you don't want to have to, that's fine. The other thing is that I have found that as I grow older, you know, that it seems that as we grow older, we seem to disappear from society. I'm saying more older people, you know, which is in America in particular, America is more geared to the young, always mm-hmm. has been, yeah. You know, kind of thing. So, you know, I, for one, really appreciate being here, seeing the deities, hearing the teachings, and hearing the people. I may, you know, just have to say it's really bliss. And the other thing, though, is that in this day and age, what do you deal, if you want to answer this, fine, if not, you don't have to. What do you do when there is a teacher who is involved with teaching bhakti yoga and devotional service, however, in the same mouth, this person says, not only am I going to teach you this, but because it, before it comes from the lips of Krishna, but I myself am Krishna. And I'm just going to throw that out there and see what happens.
Well.
Now you don't
answer. Well, what Prabhupada would say was ask him if he can show us how you can lift Govardhan Hill,
yeah.
Since you're Krishna, and, you know, see, show us what other miraculous things you can do since you're Krishna. It's foolishness. You know, it's impersonalism, but it's more than impersonalism. It's Mayavadi. It's disrespectful to Krishna. It's actually blasphemous. What can I say? It's almost laughable. I remember the first time I encountered that when I was a new devotee. I was on Miami Beach, actually. Went to the beach, and this kind of scruffy hippie kind of guy comes up, and he's smoking a cigarette, and he goes, "Oh, I'm glad you all come. My devotees have come." I said, "Oh, okay." And he's telling us how he was Krishna, you know. And I say, "Well, why are you smoking a cigarette, Krishna?" And he said, "Well, this is just the body. I'm not the body." You know, okay. I mean, you know, there is just so much mental gymnastics people go through to come up with these kind of ridiculous claims. You know, it's like, what can I say? Let's see. Your first one was about
the understanding that transmigration of the soul is simply a way of avoiding the concept that one may simply die and go through.
Okay, well, it doesn't really avoid that. First of all, the assumption is wrong, because one can, through transmigration, end up in hellish planets quite easily. It's not just always upwards and onwards and good. So, it's certainly not an excuse. It's not a cop-out or somebody. No, in fact, when you think about it, in some ways, it's much more hopeful, I think, because it isn't like a one-life plan. Which some religions have. Basically, whatever you do in this life, next lifetime, heaven, hell, that's it. No, we at least give you another chance. You know, Krishna gives you many, many millions of chances. You can go through 8,400,000 species of life. You can go up. You can go down, depending upon your desire. And that's the point. It's based upon our desires as a living entity. So you can really have what you want. It's not always what the result isn't always what you want, but you can strive any way that you want to. So I don't really see that. I mean, I don't see it as a cop-out at all. In fact, sometimes I think many of us feel somewhat guilty about what possible things we might have done over so many lifetimes in this material world. You know, I don't think it relieves one of any particular burden in that way, but I don't know. Okay, any other questions? Yeah.
Well, Prabhu mentioned that.
Fear of going to hell.
You were saying that the transmigration of soul is a way to eliminate the fear of God, because you know that there's that transcending, but not necessarily just an excuse to cop out. That's what I understood, anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.